and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Andrew Smith and Mario Ritter Jr. Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of George H.W. Bush. But first, here is Andrew Smith.
A study published Monday predicts that melting ice in Greenland will cause sea levels around the world to rise by at least 27 centimeters by 2100. This would be more than double an earlier prediction by a United Nations body. Last year's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report predicted a sea level rise of 6 to 13 centimeters by the year 2100. The researchers studied the difference between the amount of ice that accumulates on Greenland's glaciers and the amount of ice that melts at the edges of the glaciers. Snowfall in the mountains of Greenland flows down and feeds the glaciers. But in recent years, there has been less snow and more melting. The scientists said this has created an imbalance, and melting is exceeding the amount of ice accumulation. The study appeared in the scientific publication Nature. The researchers said, even if global temperatures do not rise above current levels, the ice at the edges of Greenland's ice sheet will continue melting. Richard Alley is a glaciologist at Penn State University who was not part of the study. He said the melting ice is similar to what happens when an ice cube is put in a cup of tea. He said that glaciers will continue to decrease in size because they are in warmer air, just like an ice cube will melt if placed in warm tea. The researchers predicted that 3.3% of Greenland's ice will melt. One writer estimated that more than 110 trillion tons of ice is going to melt. William Colgan helped write the study. He studies glaciers at the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland. He described the ice this way: it's dead ice. It's just going to melt and disappear from the ice sheet. The researchers used the same method that is used to study ice loss on mountain glaciers, but they extended it to include all of Greenland. Some places further away from Greenland would get more sea level rise than some places closer to Greenland, such as the east coast of the United States. The 27-centimeter rise would be in addition to increases in sea levels from normal tides and storms. Ellen Enderlin is a geosciences professor at Boise State University, who was also not part of the study. She said the sea level rise will have huge societal, economic, and environmental impacts. Lee Stearns of the University of Kansas, and Sophie Nowicki of the University of Buffalo are both ICE scientists. They said the study did not support its prediction that the sea level rise would take place by 2100. Colgan, the co-writer of the study, answered, saying the research team does not know how long it will take for the ice to melt. He said it might happen by 2100 or by 2150 at the latest. I'm Andrew Smith.
The United States on Wednesday approved an updated COVID-19 vaccine to target the Omicron version of the virus. Injections could be available within days. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, approved the new shots made by Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna. Officials credit the two vaccines with saving millions of lives, and the agency says it hopes that the new shot will prevent another increase in infections this winter. You'll see me at the front of the line, FDA vaccine chief Dr. Peter Marks told the Associated Press shortly before his agency approved the new vaccines. Until now, COVID-19 vaccines had targeted the earliest version of the coronavirus. Since then, several versions or variants have appeared. The new shots are called bivalent. They are designed to protect against both the earliest and newer versions of Omicron, called BA.4 and BA.5. These two are considered the most contagious. It really provides the broadest opportunity for protection, Pfizer vaccine chief Annalisa Anderson told the AP. The updated shots, called boosters, are for people who have already received the earlier vaccine. The FDA said the shots are not to be used as a first vaccination, and they should be given at least 2 months after people receive the last shot of the earlier vaccine version. The updated shots from Pfizer-BioNTech may be given to anyone 12 years old and older. The ones from Moderna are for adults. The U.S. has purchased more than 170 million treatments from the two companies. Pfizer said it could ship up to 15 million of the vaccines by the end of next week. Before the vaccination campaign begins, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will meet Thursday. Agency leaders are to decide whether people at high risk from COVID-19 should receive the updated shots first. U.S. health officials have urged Americans to receive a 3-shot vaccination against COVID-19. So far, only half of vaccinated Americans have gotten the 3rd shot, and only a third of those 50 and older have received an extra 4th shot. The earliest vaccines still offer strong protection against severe disease and death from COVID-19 for generally healthy people. It is unclear whether some Americans will take the updated shots at all. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Independent investigators have found that Facebook and Twitter removed a series of false accounts that pushed pro-Western policy positions to foreign users. Facebook's parent company, Meta, and Twitter said the accounts were removed because they violated their terms of service. The investigators who examined the activity say the campaigns used deceptive methods to push pro-Western narratives in the Middle East and Central Asia. A series of secret campaigns were likely carried out over a 5-year period, a report from California's Stanford University and the social media data company Graphica found. Twitter and Facebook shared their data about the accounts with the researchers, but they have not publicly identified what groups or organizations were behind the campaigns. Twitter said the evidence it gathered pointed to the United States and Britain as the likely origin of the activity. Meta identified the U.S. as being the country of origin for material appearing on Facebook and Instagram, the report said. In recent years, technology companies have shut down online influence operations connected to government-linked operations in China, Russia, and Iran. The discovery of a U.S.-based online influence effort raises questions about who is behind the campaigns and whether the operations are effective. VOA asked the U.S. Department of Defense whether the military had created the false accounts. In answer, the Pentagon's press secretary, Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder, said officials would need to look at the data provided by Facebook and Twitter. He added that the U.S. military does carry out military information support operations around the world. Ryder said he could not speak about ongoing operations or specific department methods, but he did say that any military activities operate within prescribed policies. The researchers noted that the social media accounts often shared links to false media websites as well as sources linked to the U.S. military. For example, some websites in Central Asia suggested a connection to the U.S. military's Central Command. The report said the false accounts sometimes linked to articles from Voice of America and its sister organization, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. False media sites that were created also copied stories from BBC Russia, VOA, and other sources. Several suspended social media accounts were linked to false media accounts operating in Persian, such as Darish News. That news site claimed to be an independent media company and also provided some original content. But, the report added, many of their articles were explicit reposts from U.S.-funded Persian-language media, including Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Radio Farda, and VOA Farsi. the parent government organization for VOA and RFERL, is the United States Agency for Global Media. A spokesperson for the agency, Leslie Jackson, told VOA in an emailed statement that it did not have knowledge of the false accounts. She said that USAGM only operates its own official social media accounts and websites. In doing so, the agency uses the highest standards to ensure that official accounts are fact-based, accessible, and verifiable, Jackson said. Jackson confirmed that USAGM does not work with other U.S. government agencies or other groups to push news content through false social media accounts. The methods used in the influence campaigns were similar to those used in campaigns involving other countries. These included using false photos to create accounts and using hashtags and calls to action to build support. One set of accounts in Central Asia mainly centered on Russia's military activities in the Middle East and Africa. But in February, it moved to the war in Ukraine, presenting the conflict as a threat to people in Central Asia, the report said. The researchers noted the campaign methods used did not really work to increase user involvement. Most of the posts and tweets received only a handful of likes or retweets, and a majority of the accounts had fewer than 1,000 followers. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about George Herbert Walker Bush. Before he became president in 1989, Bush had a lot of experience in government. He spent 4 years in the United States House of Representatives, worked as the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, and led the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Then, for 8 years, he was vice president under Ronald Reagan. Interestingly, in U.S. history, a person serving as vice president rarely becomes president after the sitting president leaves office at the end of his term. Before George H.W. Bush, the last time such an event happened was in 1836. At that time, Martin Van Buren took office after the two-term presidency of Andrew Jackson. Yet, neither Bush nor Van Buren was able to deal successfully with some of the problems facing the country during their years in office, or to persuade voters to elect them for a second term. While many people respect Bush for his foreign policy successes, his years in office are also remembered as a time of economic problems and social unrest. George Bush was born into a wealthy family in Massachusetts and raised in a Connecticut town near New York City. He had three brothers and a sister. Their father was a business leader who became a U.S. senator. Their mother was active doing public service work. The family employed servants, but Mrs. Bush did not want her children's privileged position to make them think they were special. Instead, she taught them to work hard and help others. When he was a young man, George Bush moved away from home to attend a private high school in Massachusetts. There, he played baseball and soccer and was elected student body president. On his 18th birthday, Bush joined the U.S. Navy. For 3 years, he fought in World War II. At the time, he was the youngest pilot in the Navy and earned a medal for bravery. In early 1945, he married a young woman he had met at a dance. Her name was Barbara Pierce. After the war, she and George moved to Connecticut, where he studied economics at Yale University and played on the school's baseball team. In time, they moved to the southern state of Texas. George Bush worked in the oil industry and became president of a company that sold oil drilling equipment. George and Barbara Bush mostly raised their 4 sons and 1 daughter in the Houston, Texas area. Another daughter died of cancer when she was a child. In time, George Bush decided to follow his father's example and enter politics. He became a Republican Party official. Then he was elected to the U.S. Congress, representing part of Houston. Despite having a home in Texas, opponents and the public connected Bush with the East Coast and the upper class. That image created some problems for Bush in the presidential election of 1980. By then, he had held other high offices in the federal government and had been successful as the head of the CIA. But voters liked another Republican candidate, former California Governor Ronald Reagan. Many Americans remembered Reagan from his days in movies and on television. When Reagan was nominated as the party's candidate for president, he asked Bush to be vice president. For 8 years, Bush held the office and worked closely with Reagan on foreign policy and other issues. In 1988, Bush finally won the presidency in his own right. On entering the White House, the new president promised to continue many of Reagan's policies of limited government. While he was a candidate, Bush often said that, if elected, he would not raise taxes. Bush also said that he wanted the United States to be a kinder and gentler nation. He wanted especially to support community organizations in their efforts to reduce crime, homelessness, and drug abuse. He also signed legislation to help people with disabilities and to protect the environment. But Bush faced a number of problems. One was a large budget deficit, created in part by increased military spending during the Reagan years. Another were disputes in Congress with the Democratic Party. And another was a banking crisis. After years of problems in the savings and loan industry, more than 1,000 small financial institutions failed. In time, Congress agreed to spend billions of dollars to help the industry recover. And President Bush had to break his promise not to raise taxes. He pointed out that he needed to balance the budget. However, many Americans and some members of his own party felt betrayed. the economic troubles helped create a mood of unrest in the country. The feeling was strengthened by events around the world. Soon after Bush took office, the Chinese government launched a campaign to stop protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. A few months later, the Berlin Wall came down. The wall separated East and West Germany. Many considered its collapse to be the end of the Soviet Union's control of Eastern Europe. At the same time, the leader of Panama, Manuel Noriega, was threatening Americans. He was also accused of supporting drug traffickers and the drug trade in the United States. Bush answered all the events in a calm, cautious way. He tried to keep good relations with China and the Soviet Union. In time, he ordered military action in Panama, and U.S. troops ousted Noriega. Supporters praised Bush's cool head and way of doing things. But critics questioned Bush's decisions. Some said he went too far. Others said he did not go far enough. The same criticisms and support were repeated during the Gulf War against Iraq. In brief, Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein ordered his forces to invade and occupy Kuwait. Bush and other world leaders created an international coalition to seek a diplomatic solution. When diplomacy failed, U.S. troops led international airstrikes against Iraq. Coalition forces also attacked on the ground. In a few weeks, the Iraqi leadership agreed to a ceasefire. Some criticized Bush for letting Saddam Hussein stay in power, but the American public largely approved of Bush's actions. He won praise for helping create an international coalition to answer the Iraqi occupation. The effort showed what some called a new world order. The U.S. and Soviet Union had even worked successfully together. Yet, soon after the end of the Gulf War, Bush failed in his efforts at re-election. The U.S. economy had entered a recession, and Bush was not able to connect effectively with voters, even though those who knew him personally said Bush was a kind, gentle person. One of his last acts as president was to write a note for the candidate who had beat him, wishing him well. George H.W. Bush retired to his home in Texas with his wife, Barbara. They also have a house in Maine. Bush often urged Americans to help others in their community. He put his words into action by volunteering with his church and supporting a local hospital. On his 90th birthday, Bush did something unusual to test his image as a cautious person. He celebrated by going skydiving. For many, Bush is remembered for his connection to other presidents. He is often linked to the Reagan years. Compared to Reagan, Bush is usually considered a less conservative leader, as well as a less charismatic one. By the 21st century, historians began comparing the former President Bush with another president, his son, George Walker Bush, who took office 8 years after his father left it. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.